how you doing, Ricky?
Hey, man. Welcome, everybody. Hey, Derek. We got the intro wrong tonight. We got the African-American theme song, African-American athlete theme song instead of yours. But it is all good, brother, because it's never a bad time to hear a few licks from the Godfather.
I couldn't agree more. I agree 100%. How you doing today?
Man, I'm doing fantastic. I am excited about this show. We got a legendary figure coming on with us tonight, man.
Hey, Ricky, I wanted people to tune in tonight. I'm hoping we have a big audience because this gentleman, he has some history, and he has a story that he wanted to be told. It was nice that he reached out to me, and, you know, I got to talk to him a little bit, and I really enjoyed it. I don't know a whole lot about him other than what I, you know, kept up with during his career. But I'm excited, and I want to welcome everybody in tonight to Derek Gervin's As Good As It Gets podcast. I'm on with my partner, Mr. Ricky Hampton Sr., who all of you know I have very high respect for. Tonight we have a gentleman from the Georgetown Hoyas. That was back in my day. So I played in the 80s, in the 82 through 85. This gentleman played for the Georgetown Hoyas during the 1983-84 season. He was a champion, and he played with some great players. So I'm excited tonight. I'm hoping he's on the line. Ricky, do you know if we have him on the line yet?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Okay. Well, I'm honored to welcome in tonight Mr. Michael Graham. I call him the Enforcer. How you doing, Mike?
I'm doing great, gentlemen. Thank you all for having me on. I really appreciate it. You guys had me doing the two-step listening to JB, man.
this is Ricky Hampton. I just got to say, man, we are really looking forward to speaking with you tonight. I mean, man, you made an impact on the game of college basketball that stands to the day. But I'm going to let Derek start it off here.
Well, Mike, I've talked to you, and I've been talking to you the last couple of days, and I'm honored, man. I mean that sincerely. It doesn't matter to me whether it was NBA, it was high school, college. You left your mark on the game, something that will never, ever be forgotten. And I'm proud to have you on the show, my man, and I mean that from the bottom of my heart, man. I'm excited tonight, big fella.
Well, thanks, Derek. I really appreciate it, man.
Hey, will you do us a favor, Mike, before we start even getting into your story? I want to start off just talk about pretty much your history. I know you went to you're from D.C.
I know
you went to Spring Garden High School. Can you tell us pretty much about what started your career? What even made you – you 6'9", 270, and I don't know how your size when you were younger. What got you interested in playing the game of basketball?
Well, what got me interested in the game of playing basketball, I was in the ninth grade. And during that time, you know, I was really tall, the tallest one in the school. But I didn't have basketball in my mind. You know, I come from a single parent, you know, and my mom, you know, struggled and everything else. So me, being though I was the oldest, and I considered myself the man of the house, you know, I was out committing crime, man. You know, I'm not going to sit up here and sugarcoat it. You know, I was doing things to survive and to help, you know, provide for my younger brothers. So, you know, I wind up meeting this guy who was a police officer. And he worked at a police boys and girls club. So, you know, he wanted me to play the game and everything. He came up to my school, talked to my principal, you know, and suggested that, you know, I try playing basketball. So he went over to my house to talk to my mother and everything. And my mother told him, Michael don't know anything about no basketball. He don't know how to play, which I didn't. You know, I just had the height and the size and everything. And, you know, I got the plan and everything. And, you know, he developed me. I couldn't throw a rock in the ocean, but I was known for getting that ball and rebounding. And that's what I did. Then after that, once, you know, I got to high school, everything seemed to take off very quickly, you know. My 10th grade year, I was considered one of the best players in the city, you know. And my 10th grade year, we wind up going to the city championship only losing to Danny Ferry and DeMatha and them. And, you know, I mean, everything took off. I mean, at the half, I had like 26 points. You know, the second half came of the game, I didn't see the ball no more. But, you know, that was cool. I mean, I really enjoyed the recognition and you know, everything else I got that went along with it. And it sort of like changed my life. You know, it sort of like made me see, you know, that I didn't have to do crime in order to get what I want. I got a way to help, you know, support the family and, you know, do something positive because, man, I was a thorn in my mother's side.
Hey, Ricky, hey, Mike, did you have, because I was kind of, you know, I grew up in Detroit as well. So I grew up in Detroit, so big city. And, you know, I was an all-A student, and then I kind of started hanging with the wrong crowd. Did you have somebody during your high school years, did you have somebody that kind of took you under their wing, one of the players or maybe someone in your school that saw something in you, not only as an athlete but as a person?
Well, it was quite a few people. It was my godfather. He's been gone for a while, Ernest Faulkner. He was a teacher there at Spingarn, and then it was my godmother who took me in once my mother, and since had passed, Miss Catherine Marshall. And you know, they was real, real instrumental in my life. And not only those two people, but my high school coach, John Woods. He was very instrumental in my life and, you know, my upbringing and everything. This man cared about me more than I cared about myself. You know, I used to be a thorn in his side too when I was, you know, in high school and everything. I mean, I fathered a child, you know, my 10th grade year, and you know how a girlfriend and boyfriend do. You know, during that time, my son's mother used to be jealous with every girl coming at me in high school. So we was like fighting all the time in high school. So yeah, it was crazy, man. Immaturity. That's what it was.
Go ahead, Rick.
Hey, yeah. Hey, Michael, when it took off of you sophomore year, then you go on to junior year, you're dominating the city. And D.C. basketball, that whole, the DMV, man, what is it about the players that come out of there? You guys got a rich tradition, which you are a part of. I want you to speak to that. And when did you start getting the letters from the colleges?
Well, the tradition, I mean, it starts way back. I mean, if you go back, I remember when I first watched a basketball game. I think I went to Howard University to watch a basketball game, and I was watching this guy, Larry Spriggs, who used to play with the Lakers.
Yeah.
And, man, I mean, he came down court and did some type of dunk, man. We went around his waist and threw his legs and threw it down, and I'm like, wow. You know, I mean, I thought that was incredible, you know. So, I mean, we had a rich tradition going way back, you know, with Coach Thompson and Will Jones and Dave Bing and you know, I mean, it went back, man. I mean, that was really something. So, and as far as me getting the letters, I started getting them after my sophomore year. You know, because they considered me a man child, you know, during that time. And I would rebound, you know, I would get you like 20 boards a game. And, you know, everything started to change. And during that time, you know, I was a grade behind. So I had to go to night school. So I actually didn't have an 11th grade year. I wound up going from the 10th to my senior year. You know, and things just got, I was the only one in the city made high school All-American. You know, all metropolitan. So it was something, you know. And I loved the attention. You know, it was something. And we had some hell of a players during the time I played. And what made me go to Spingarn, my cousin, his name is Gregory Graham. He's been deceased a while. He had a friend named Cliff Cotton. And Cliff Cotton, I mean, this guy was a chubby guy. He was around 6'3", 6'4", and could rebound with the best of them. But then he also had a guy that was a center that came from Mount Hope, West Virginia, by the name of Earl Jones. And you know, I mean, watching Earl Jones, I mean, man, a 7-footer that can bring the ball up like a god, you know, I started doing that. I'm like, wow, you know, that's I never seen anything like it. So, you know, that's sort of like that piqued my interest and wanted me to work on my game even more, and I did.
You played and turned it out in high school and became known. I got to ask you, man, because I know people want to know just like I do.
Mm-hmm.
Georgetown, Mike, how you end up there? Tell us a little bit first, even before you tell us really what it was like being around those guys. Tell us a little bit about the man that got you there in the first place, Mr. John Thompson.
Well, actually, what it was, my high school coach, he the one that, you know, I went on all these trips to visit schools. I didn't think Georgetown was recruiting me. But come to find out, I was best friends with Coach Thompson's nephew. He went to Spingarn, you know, and he was a ball player. And wind up, you know, we became best friends and everything. And I had signed a letter of intent to attend Maryland because Maryland was up there every day, Lefty Dizelle, his assistant coach. So I was on my way to Maryland. And what really piqued my interest during that time was, you know, we had a student aide, a guy by the name of Fred, you know, and he was best friends with Coach Thompson, and he would say, "Oh, you never heard anything from Coach Thompson yet?" I said, "No." He said, "John is trying to recruit you. You ain't getting none of the letters he sent." I said, "No, I didn't." And the reason why, because him and my high school coach had an issue going on about a former player years before me. So, you know, that's sort of like stopped me from receiving the letters because he didn't give them to me. He wanted me to go. My high school coach wanted me to go to Maryland. So, you know, what piqued my interest, we was on a trip in the Virgin Islands during high school. We played in a tournament. And I watched the game with Patrick and Ralph Sampson, Georgetown versus Virginia. And, man, mm-hmm. I was like, man, that was an awesome game. And I'm like, man, I got to play with one of these big guys. I wish I could, but I already signed with Maryland. So then I watched the tournament at the end of the year, and I noticed Georgetown lost to Memphis State. And when they lost to Memphis State, Keith Lee and those guys, you know, I could see right there that they needed somebody to protect Patrick, and they needed that power forward. I mean, they had all the good players. As a matter of fact, they had the number one player that was coming out that year, which was Anthony Jones. They had William Martin, who came out of D.C. McKinley Tech. I mean, he had a host of guys. He had Gene Smith. He had Fred Brown. So I wanted to attend there, you know, and I thought, you know, that probably never happened. But come to find out, you know, they was doing their research on me. They kept calling the guy who wrote for the high school basketball from the Washington Post by the name of Donald Huff. He told me recently that he would get a call every week from Coach Thompson asking, "Who's the best player in the Washington, D.C. area?" And it was every week. It was me, you know. And so they started doing their research. So I had to, you know, go to Georgetown a couple of times and sit down and talk to Coach. I guess, you know, he wanted to fill me out and everything. So my godfather, who was a teacher at Spingarn, Mr. Ernest Faulkner, would take me up there, and we would, you know, sit around and kick it with Coach and some of the assistant coaches, and, you know, I guess they were filling me out and everything. So during that time, when it was time to go to school, all of a sudden I really didn't have the grades to go there. So that's why I had to attend a summer school in order to get the grades, you know, to go to Georgetown. I attended the summer school, upward bound program, got the grades, and, you know, I was at Georgetown.
Go ahead, Rick. Ricky, you there? Can you hear me, Mike?
Yeah, I can hear you.
All right, well, I don't know. Ricky's having technical difficulties. Let me welcome everybody again before we get to the next question for you, Mike, please.
Okay.
I want to welcome everybody to Derek Gervin's welcome you to Derek Gervin's As Good As It Gets podcast. I want to thank all our listeners from all over the world. I know we have listeners in Australia, China, and I want to just thank everybody for tuning in, especially today, Mr. Michael Graham's on the show, and it's going to be a fantastic show. So Thank everyone for tuning in. I hope you and your families are staying safe. Mike, you get to Georgetown. You go ahead and you sign. You play there. And then you get there and you meet the guys. You mentioned a few guys, Bill Martin and some guys that I'm familiar with. Mm-hmm. What was it like in practice every day? I know you guys were tough. And I'm talking about, I watched from man to man. All you guys were really tough. What was it like? What was practice like every day?
Oh, practice was like game time. You know, you had, it was a bloodbath. You know, everybody played hard. You know, nobody gave nobody no slack. And coach didn't go for it. You couldn't even yawn in practice. You know, so it was real tough, you know. I mean, we went all out during practice, and, I mean, you're talking about some hard practices. I never practiced that hard before in my life, but, it, you know, it made me better. So, you know, the practices I enjoyed because, I mean, it led up to us winning the national championship, practicing hard every day, you know, with the workouts, you know, with us, you know, running the miles. You know, so, I mean, that sort of helped everything, you know, them balking, trying to balk me and Reggie up by putting weight on it. So it was a professional program, you know. I enjoyed being there some of the time, and some of the time I didn't, you know. So, I mean, but I'm glad, you know, we all had one common goal at the end, and that was to win the national championship. And, you know, that's what I had told coach when I was being recruited, you know, because I knew that's what they needed that power for.
Did you think your role was, could you see during the preseason, during the practices, could you see mm-hmm. your role evolving to the point where it could help you guys even compete to make it anywhere near the Final Four?
Yes, but the thing was, during the summertime, they had this summer league called the Kenner League. And on our team was me, Patrick, and Reggie Williams. That was our starting front court. And, you know, we went undefeated. You know, if Pat didn't get it off the rim, I did. You know, it was more like the opponent was watching us instead of playing against us. You know, nobody wanted to play against us. And during the season, I guess because by me and Reggie being a freshman, you know, especially me, didn't play a lot. You know, I remember one game where we went to Providence and I scored like 12 points in a row to open up, and then he sent me down, didn't play me no more. So that was real frustrating, you know, because I thought that, you know, that I was going to be there in the starting lineup, but I knew it was guys there before me and that played and everything. So I had to accept my role, which I did.
Ricky, you there?
Hey, can you guys hear me now?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Oh, great, great. Mike, the team you guys had, I mean, it was, you guys were like a cultural phenomenon in the black community, and you guys were despised by some in other communities. Did you feel that? Or did you know all that was going on back there? You see the rappers wearing Georgetown gear. You know, it was all because of you guys.
Yeah, I mean, I sort of seen it, but I didn't know the sense of urgency for it. You know, me being a freshman, you know, I mean, I ain't paying no attention. I mean, you had even had guys in Chicago that was part of a game. I met one guy, and he was in a game called the Georgetown Disciples in Chicago. You know, so that sort of like blew my mind. You know, it's like, wow. So, I mean, it seemed like, and I personally think that we were the bad boys before the Raiders, before the Detroit Pistons. You know, we were it, you know. And,
oh, no doubt.
Yeah, and, you know, I sort of figured, you know, that's what they needed. So I felt like that, you know, I could bring that to them, and I did, because I know Patrick needed help. He needed people, you know, to stop beating on him, and somebody had to be there for him. So, you know, we were kicking butts and taking names later. We could walk on the court, man, and, you know, normally I can look at a team and tell, you know, because it seemed like every time we got on the court, they would look at me and laugh, you know. And that told me right then and there, they're already afraid, you know. So, I mean, we just went on and kicked butt, man.
Did you feel the racial tension? Were you aware of all that that was going on with Coach Thompson, you know, some in the media were trying to say you remember Hoyer Paranoia?
Yeah, and I love him to death. Don't get me wrong. I still run through a brick wall for him, but I think sometime I think it was coached with the paranoia, you know, because I really didn't see it. You know, it was like it was always like us against the world. Sometimes
yeah.
I didn't feel that way, you know. I really didn't feel that way, but I understand what he was trying to do to get us to play even harder. You know, I didn't understand that, you know, we would play at Madison Square Garden and stay somewhere way up in Ride, New York. You know what I'm saying? So I was sort of like mind-blowing and different, but, you know, that's the way he was.
But, man, the way you played, you were such an intimidating player. I mean, it seemed like maybe you weren't, but watching you, you seem to be just enraged. I'm getting every rebound. I'm contesting every shot. You play like a man possessed.
Well, that's how I always played, even throughout high school, you know, because, you know, back in the day in high school, I used to play with a bunch of guys older than me and taller, and I always seen a challenge. And I got a guy that's taller than me, and they say he can play, that's a challenge to me. Because the first thing I try to do is embarrass him and take his will. And if I got your will, it's over.
So that's what you would, and you just took that to Georgetown with you.
I took it to Georgetown with me. You know, I did. You know, I remember when we was playing Kentucky, you know, we took their will. I know we did, but I still got cursed out at the halftime by coach because I guess we were down, and he was saying, "Well, I brought you here to protect Patrick, and look at you." And that just like really pissed me off, right? And I know that's what he was trying to do, and he did it. He pushed that button, man, and you know that was it. You know, I mean, Twin Towers. We didn't care about no Twin Towers. We was going out there to kick that butt because number one, we've been on the road for so long. And, you know, me being the man of the house and my mother a single parent, you know, it sort of like broke me down, you know. I mean, I cried because I wanted to go home, you know. So I remember the assistant coach, Mike Rowley, used to come back in back of the bus and talk to me and, you know, say, "It's going to be okay. We don't have long." Man, every time I would hear this song by Lionel Richie, man, I would burst out in tears.
Look,
I was ready to go home, man.
Derek, that's the softer side of Michael Graham that nobody ever saw.
Yeah,
nobody
you know what I'm saying?
Who could have ever imagined Michael Graham sitting in the back of the bus crying at Lionel Richie? Nobody.
Yeah. I think the record was a while ago. Suddenly, it was me you were looking for. Something of that nature. And I just, every time I heard it, man, it was a popular song back then. Man, that thing would have me crying. And here comes Gene Smith with what the music that he had. What was that song? Culture Club, to cheer me up. I was like, man, come on.
Boy George.
Yeah, Boy George. Yes, indeed.
Hey, Mike, I know Coach, I'm sure he chews you guys out in practice. And you, at that time, I know sometimes it was rough, and you said you had some rough times, but did you ever see that coach saw something in you? What I see from the outside is you were the guy that helped him get over the hump. I used to start watching when they had Sleepy Floyd and those guys, right?
Uh-huh.
And you could see the team evolving, but they didn't win the championship. And you had a big part. You came in, you were an integral part of that, man. I hope that you've got just due and people have told you how important you were to the team. Even when I look at you playing in the Final Four, people remember you weren't supposed to be a scorer, but you had 22 points and 11 rebounds in the Final Four. How did you feel? How did you feel? Did you feel kind of, man, I don't know what the word I want to use. What kind of feeling did you have after that, after you had shown everybody that you could play on both ends of the floor?
Well, I knew I could play, and it was the sense that, you know, freshman playing at Georgetown, you don't have it made. You gotta sort of like earn it. And coach, I guess, didn't want to put me out there. We could talk to the media, you know, things of that nature. And I was frustrated a lot of times because a lot of stuff went on up there, which I tell in my book that, you know, I didn't think was right, but who am I? I'm a freshman. You know what I'm saying? So it's either his rules or the highway. So that's what we had to do. It was real frustrating, but I felt, you know, that I got my vengeance. And even though now, that what hurts me today is that we spent like 30 some odd years, and they don't even celebrate us winning the championship there. You know, and you see UNLV, you see Villanova, you see the Fab Five, but it's like, what about us? You know what I'm saying? And I blame the schools, and since I blame the school and somewhat coach, he might have his reasons. I don't know. You know, but I mean, I don't think that we all need to get just due. I mean, you know, the only people that do probably get the just due is Patrick, which rightly deserved, because you know he's been the man. You know, he's been the man. But you know, I know, you know, after all these years and me trying to sweep it under the rug, I know that I was a real big part of that. You know, I know I was, and right now I'm coming to grips with, you know, I have. I just, you know, want them to realize that we had a team. And far as that team to me is my family. You know, and all the guys, you know, should be proud of what we've done, and I believe they are. But I don't think we get our just due as a team. You know, I really don't.
That's funny, Mike. We just had Anderson Hunt from the great UNLV team on, and he was talking. They had just had all the players back to celebrate their national championship. Was that 91, Derek, when they won?
Yeah, 91.
Yeah, whenever they won it, they just invited them back.
No, they won in 90, and then they lost them, I believe, in 90. Yeah.
Yeah, they Yeah, matter of fact, you had a guy from D.C. on that team, David Butler.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah,
hey, tell our listening audience why you decided to write the book after all these years, and those who want to read it, how they can pick it up, and what they're going to read about in the book.
I decided because everybody keeps telling me that I have a story. You got a story, you got a story, you know. Everybody keeps telling me, and you know, and since I noticed, I even heard it from some of the assistant coaches that were there at Georgetown during that time. You know, and I get it from Reggie Williams all the time. You know, we could have won probably 3, probably 4 championships if I was still there. You know, which, yeah, and I always have been told that, you know, they didn't win a championship because Patrick was there. Yeah, he was there. He was a big part of it. But when you came, that's when they won. When you left, that's when they couldn't win. Yeah, you had them, you know, with a hell of a record the following year. But when it was time to win that big one, for some reason they couldn't. Yeah, Villanova shot the lights out, but you didn't have nobody to knock them players on their ass, you know, or to throw them off rhythm, you know. And then you had all the guys on the team try to bring that intimidation. But it wasn't working. It wasn't there. You know, he needed that power forward. He needed that guy that's going to, you know, go to war with him. And that was me. What's going to be in the book? It's going to be in the book from, you know, me starting off playing in my childhood through high school, my year up at Georgetown, and what I experienced, the good, the bad, and the ugly. My years, you know, playing professionally for Henry Bibby, Cassie Russell, Phil Jackson, and John Lucas. You know, I played for some great coaches. And then it was said, rumor was going around that I couldn't play. I can only play for a black coach. You know, that sort of like made me mad too, because that wasn't me. You know, how we went in the CBA, we went from last place. I was in Wyoming playing for Cassie Russell. We went from last place to making a playoff, and then being in the finals playing against Michael Ray Richardson and losing. And then I wound up playing for Henry Bibby in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and during the semifinals and during the playoffs, I was averaging like 21 boards a game and wound up getting suspended because of immaturity again. Yeah, it's a lot I got to tell. It is a lot.
You know, some of those guys are listening today to the show, big fella. Ron Spivey and guys like that.
Yeah, that's my – you know what? Ron Spivey. Let me tell you about that guy, man. I love that guy, man. That guy is a flat-out professional. You know what I'm saying? He's a CBA. He was a CBA veteran, but he's a man – And what makes it so bad, man, he's the nicest guy in the world, man. And I love that guy. I really, really do, man. That guy taught me a lot about the CBA, especially when we was playing for Cassie. I mean, even though he was undersized, probably about 6'4", 6'5", played the power forward and everything, but he was tough as nails. He was tough as nails.
I'm glad you brought up the CBA. Because a lot of times we talk a lot about the NBA on here. You and I have a history and played years in the CBA. I played there as well, and I played for Henry Bibby in Oklahoma City. I was supposed to end up in Tulsa in 1989, but the commissioner was in an accident, a plane crash.
I remember that. Hey, what's his name? Chase something.
I don't remember his name at that time. But at that time, all the papers were messed up, so I ended up going to Santa Barbara. But at that time, people don't know. The NBA, at that time, the CBA was like, for the young people today that's listening, it's similar to the G League.
Right.
But it was veterans. The CBA, yep. I think, is what paved the way for a lot of guys. To me, I feel if you play well in the CBA and you had a good career there, it didn't have to be NBA. And that's what I feel. Tell me what you think about that, big guy, because I know you played for about 5 or 6 teams, and you got to play. A lot of people don't know George Karl, CBA.
Oh, man, George Karl, Phil Jackson. That's all of them got their start there. What was the guy who was out with Minnesota and he wound up passing?
Flip Saunders.
Yeah. No. Bill Musselman.
Okay, Bill Musselman.
I mean, they had hell of a coaches.
CBA as well.
Who was that? Yeah, Flip Saunders. Flip was my coach, Ricky.
Flip Saunders did coach in the CBA.
I was fortunate to win one championship, and that championship was with Flip Saunders playing in lacrosse. Rest in peace, Flip. So a lot of people don't know. I thought playing at that time, it was preparing a lot of guys for the NBA. I had a conversation today with a guy on Facebook, Mike, and I'm going to ask you, how important do you think it is? We talked about having an IQ on the floor, and I asked this gentleman, I won't say his name, I asked him, did you think you had to have a brain to play pro ball? His answer was no. And my answer,
yes, you do.
To play a role on the team, don't you have to – everything has to fall in place. So being a role player, all the players on the floor are role players, but doesn't it take lots of brains to play your role and do it to the best of your ability to the point where it helps your team?
Yeah, of course. I mean, without the IQ, I mean, you shouldn't be on the floor. You know, you shouldn't be on the floor without the IQ. I mean, you got to have an IQ.
Well, I just wanted to know, because I just thought.
Yeah. You never play the CBA or any professional league if you don't have basketball IQ. I mean, that's important.
I agree. Yeah. Well, now you know how my conversation went. I agree 100%. Hey, big fella, Ricky has a question for you.
Uh-huh.
Hey, Michael, going back to where they were saying that the word was out that you would only play for a black coach, I'm thinking some of that came from the perception of the Georgetown days. And unfortunately, the way you played, I mean, you guys were intimidating, menacing. But like I said, they didn't know you were crying in the back of the bus because on the floor you were killing people. And then the Hoyer paranoia. Mm-hmm. I mean, y'all were almost like rebels and stuff. Did you think some of that followed you into your professional career?
Yeah, I think so. Because after the apology from Bill Musk, I mean, what's his name? Bill I can't think of his name, but he was a sportscaster, and he did our games, and he always said that we were thugs, and, you know, I'm always trying to hurt somebody. It ain't the point that I'm trying to hurt somebody. I'm just playing hard. And you know, I mean, I think sometimes I've been at the wrong place at the wrong time. For instance, we were playing Dayton, and as I dunked the ball, I turned, and you had Seth and Tony right there. So what I'm supposed to do, you know, the man is in my way. I have to come down and turn around and run down the court. I took one step. He was right there in front of me. So he was in the way. So, I didn't want to hurt him or anything, but I ran him over. You know, I wasn't going to hit the floor either him or me. You know, and that's what I chose. And another thing, for instance, we were playing Syracuse, and I went up for a rebound, and I think Andre Hawkins got the rebound, and I sort of like pushed him, but they said I threw a punch. Little do they know, you know, me and Andre now best friends, but I was totally wrong because he wasn't the guy that punched me in my side. It was another guy looking at the tape now. It was another guy that was on the right side of me that was under the basket, but I didn't see him. Only person I see was Hawkins, you know. So I mean, you learn that basketball is a physical sport.
When you swung around,
the rivalry with Syracuse.
Oh man, that thing goes back, man. And wow, ever since Coach Thompson, I guess, got to Georgetown, every time that we played Syracuse, especially at their place, you know, we would come out. They would throw oranges, marbles, coins, you know, a little bit of everything. They would have signs, you know, about Patrick and everything. So yeah, they made it a rival. You know, so we had to go out, and the mentality we had, we were going to go out and kick some butt. You know, if we didn't win one game that year, you know, we had to be Syracuse. Yeah, we had to be Syracuse.
Did you get a chance to play against Pearl? Or was he gone?
Yeah.
Was Pearl there when you – he was gone by then, wasn't he?
No, Pearl was there. Pearl used to have Coach drinking pints of milk before and after the game. I guess the ulcer was acting up, you know, because Coach was like, we got to stop her. No, seriously. That's where you got that milk commercial at.
Michael, who was when you played in college, for the year you played at Georgetown, who was the tougher player that you guys had to go against?
Wow. Probably I would say Otis Thorpe.
Oh, yeah.
You know, from Providence. He was a big, strong guy. I mean, this guy had natural ability, man. He had the NBA body. I mean, he was chiseled. And, man, I was looking at this cat, man, like, man, you got to take a bet or something with this dude, man. And, but he was the nicest guy in the world.
Mike, Ricky, what's the gentleman's name that does radio in Washington that we've had on the show, Mr. Adams?
Butch McAdams.
Oh, my man,
Butch
McAdams.
Yeah.
That's my man.
I had a great interview on Butch McAdams' show recently. Yeah.
Yeah, that's my man, Butch McAdams.
Mike, so you today, when you look at today, I know they talk about Carmelo and a lot of these guys and, you know, Bradley Beal and a lot of these players. When you look at the what's going on with the NBA today, what do you think and what do you see going forward with the Washington Wizards as far as starting to compete for a championship? Do you see that happening anytime soon?
No, I don't see that happening at all. In today's game, you know, I might watch it during the NCAA tournament or maybe the NBA championship. But today's game, it's not like it used to be. You know, for one, they're not as physical. I think they're soft. They're trying to make the game a high-scoring game, you know, all the time. And, you know, I mean, you think about back in the day, you know, and I tell kids today, you know, you want people to tell you how great you are. Even if you're great, I'm not going to tell you that. You know, when we were coming up, we didn't have entourages of 50 people, or we wasn't thinking about, you know, the NBA or playing 1 year of college and nothing like that. You know, and look at the game today. You know, you got all these kids coming out of high school thinking that they can play in the NBA now. And I think by them doing what they did with this G League, they done made it tougher for colleges to even think about getting top recruits to come play at their universities. So, I mean, it's just exploitation of the kids overall. It's a meat market. You know, I love AAU, but you got the AAU coaches, you know, representing the kids. It's not the high school coaches anymore. It's AAU. And then you got them, the coaches in AAU, you know, they want tennis shoe contracts. You know, they want X amount of dollars, you know, and the same with parents. You know, so it's out of control right now. It really is. And I don't think it's helping the kids none. And they say, well, okay, you ain't got to finish school. You about to get all this money. Heck, you can go back to school and finish. Okay, but it's not guaranteed because you can go out here and break something and do what you're going to do then. You know, what you're going to do. I mean, I made sure that I was able to go back and get my education and get my degree in business, you know, because that was important to my mother, and I promised her that. You know, I really have. I mean, it makes me go back and be humble, because I remember when my mother was alive, she never owned a pair of shoes. You know, she always had cloth bedroom slippers, and, you know, it could be snowing 5-6 feet outside. She's wearing those cloth bedroom shoes. You know,
wow.
So stuff like that really makes you humble and really make you think, you know, you can't take it for granted. You can't.
Hey Mike, consider when you're out there playing, your mom was going through, you know, the financial difficulties that your family had, and then you see all these people wearing Georgetown gear. Do you think you guys should have been compensated in some kind of form or fashion? And do you think the players today should receive some type of compensation from the
NCAA? Well, we wasn't compensated. I mean, we barely got a pair of shoes from Coach, you know. So, I mean, we were lucky to get a scholarship, you know. That was our compensation. You know, you're going to play at this university, and we're going to give you a scholarship to get a degree and sort of like brighten up your future just in case you don't make it to the next level. You know, I mean, I remember, you know, we would go to training table and I would see all this good food, steaks and shrimp and all that. I didn't eat that stuff at home. But, you know, that would upset me and make me cry because I know that my family at home wasn't eating like that. You know, that sort of like bothered me, but I know that I had to, you know, stay the course and try to get my education in order to make things better. But as far as compensation, you know, I mean, I don't think they need a whole lot of money. You know, if you got a kid that's in financial difficulties and need a little push, then yeah, you probably should help that kid. But yeah, I'm not talking about in tune of $100,000 or, you know, or $50,000 or what have you. You know, a kid is there to get an education, you know, and to me, that'll make a kid more humble, you know, to go through those situations. And I'm glad I did went through those situations. I think I'm a better person today because of what I went through. And that 1 year at Georgetown made me become a man because of the people who I met and the maturity that I got. You know, ever since I went to Georgetown, before I went to Georgetown, I used to be late for everything. Coach didn't tolerate you being late. So now, even though today I still got, you know, that mentality of, okay, I can't be late for nothing. So I could be like a job interview. You know, I might, you know, my interview's not probably not at 2 o'clock. I get there at 1:30. You know,
And you know what, Derek? Yeah. Mike had called in before we even came on the air because you could see it over the computer line. So Mike had called in about before we came on the air.
Yeah. So that's still with me. As far as being compensated, you know, maybe for the video games, because I remember 1 year after Ed O'Bannon filed that lawsuit, you know, and you know, I got to remember. Some years ago, I was on a video game. My likeness, number and everything. I think it was a college game. Yeah, it was, matter of fact. And so, yeah, I mean, I wasn't looking for no money, but, I, you know, they sent me a check for $15. I still got it in the free.
$15?
$15, yep.
Mike, let me do my last update. I want to welcome everybody to Derek Gerben's As Good As It Gets podcast. Thanks for tuning in early today. We had an early edition so that we could get Mr. Michael Graham on here. The reason we did the show early today is because I know a lot of people are interested in watching The Last Dance, and I didn't want to interfere with that. So I want to thank you, Michael, for making the show happen, for even coming on early, and I appreciate you for coming out of your way to make it happen.
Thank you, man. I really appreciate you all.
But, hey, Mike, when does the book come out?
Go ahead, Rick. I'm sorry.
When does the book come out, and where can people pick it up?
Well, right now, I'm trying to continue to raise the funding to put the book out. I got a writer. He's an award-winning author. He was also assistant coach for Phil Jackson, and he's a close friend of Phil Jackson's. He was a head coach in the CBA. His name is Charlie Rosen. So right now, I'm trying to get the funding together. You know, like I said, everybody keeps telling me, I got a story, I need to tell it. So, you know, I want to tell it. And, you know, those who want to donate, you can go to my Cash App, $Graham209, or even you can go to my PayPal, which is my PayPal, which is paypal.me/MichaelGraham50, all one word, and help me out. I mean, you can donate as little as $2. You know, so right now I'm just trying to get the funding together. You know, a lot of people talking about, you know, it's going to be a documentary. I don't think so. You know, I just want to put the book out. Even if, you know, I might sell 10 books or 100 books. As long as the kids know and they get out there, and if I can help one kid, you know, I did everything that I was set out to do.
Well, I want people to really hear Mike, hear what he's saying, because Charlie Rosen is a very reputable man in the basketball world. A lot of the young people might not be familiar with him, but he's had a very good career. I even remember when he coached Rockford, Michael, in the CBA.
But
you know that's Phil's right-hand man, and so I think something good will happen. I think your book is – I think you really got a story, man. Yo, what I want to say, and I'm hoping people heard this today, is that we're dealing with a big man, a big 6'9 guy. He was 270 in his playing days, but you kind of remind me of Rick Mahorn, man, big teddy bear, man. I'm going to say that. And that's big.
Man, I remember Rick when he was here in Washington, man, and they used to – make Kevin Green and them used to come up to Georgetown and play. And, you know, we used to play with him, man. And this big old guy used to, you know, come to me and say, man, you know, you're my favorite player. I was like, wow. You know, hearing that from him, man, that sort of made my head even bigger than what it was. You know, I was like, wow. You know, really something.
I wonder why Rick would like the way Michael Graham plays. But, you know, Rick Mahorn, Michael, I went to school up your way. I went to Virginia Union. And
okay.
And Rick was over at Hampton. So I got to see Rick play quite a bit because at that time, Hampton was still in the CIAA. After your first year at Georgetown, you ended up leaving. Did you want to go? I know you had some struggle with your grades, but that's something you could have worked out. What made you decide not to come back?
It was a lot, but it's going to be in the book. And like I say, I'm not trying to ruffle no feathers or get anybody upset, but it's a lot of people, a lot went on that a lot of people don't know. You know, I was offered, when I went to Georgetown, I was offered to go to school abroad. They was going to send me abroad. So I didn't have no problem with the work, you know, because I was helping some of the players that came in. And I was getting my tutoring, too. Don't get me wrong. I'm no Einstein. But, you know, a lot went on that I didn't like coming from a single parent and everything and some things that were said to me. And, you know, I just didn't like it. You know, I didn't like it. Everybody said, well, he left because of his grade. That was not the reason why. Trust me. You know, I mean, other things went on. You know, and I disagree eye to eye with some things, and you know, it was just time for me to move on. And when I moved on, you know, I wind up attending UDC, a school I felt comfortable with, in a sense. Before I even hit the floor, Sports Illustrated had ranked us number one in the country in Division II schools. I haven't even put on a uniform yet, you know, but that didn't work out because, you know, the coach and the athletic director was having issues with one another. So I went on and signed an agent who's JoJo White, the late JoJo White, and I just moved on, you know.
Yeah, and I know. That's the rap on you. He didn't have the grades at Georgetown. He was just a thug at Georgetown. I always knew that wasn't true, but I, being an old sports writer myself, Mike, I know how guys try to put stuff out there about you, especially with the reputation that was being made about you guys and having you not being able to get the grades and whatnot, you know, fit right into that reputation they were trying to build of you all.
And you know, I didn't follow up with it. I mean, it was frustrating sometimes, but you know, I could have made it through Georgetown if I wanted to, but like I said, I just didn't feel comfortable there anymore. And trust and believe it, it's no knock on coach or the program or anything, but you know, Georgetown didn't have a lot of smart people come through there. You know what I'm saying? They did. And sometimes, me personally, I had really wondered. You know, not a knock against the program, but it is what it is. You know, I didn't want a sociology degree because that's all the players got. You know, I wanted something better, you know, and the stuff I was going through. I remember me writing the paper, and when I turned the paper in, I got the best grade out of the class. And the professor came to me and said, that wasn't my paper. I stayed up all night doing that paper, man. I was so hurt. You know, that's when I knew right there, I don't belong here. You know what I'm saying? When you telling me, just because you used to, you're probably getting players that's probably not even smarter than me, and I give you a paper, and, you know, you going to tell me it wasn't my writing. But I stayed up all night to do that paper, to make sure it was right. I mean, that's a hurtful feeling. You know, that's a very hurtful feeling. But like I said, you don't know. You know, they offered me to go to school in England. You know, so I had to be some kind of smart to go to school abroad. I turned it down.
Well, I'm going to tell you from this interview, I think you're very intelligent. Hey, Mike, I want you to do me a favor. A lot of people, you know, when they talk about athletes, basketball players, football players, they don't think sometimes that we're very intelligent. And I'm going to try a guy to try to kill that stereotype because I believe that athletics is just what we do. And that has nothing to do with the person, how they think. And so I want you to tell, I know you still deal with kids. What will be your message to all the kids out here? I coach AAU, and I still do basketball training, individual and group. What will be your message to all these kids out there today that aspire to be, I'll say, great athletes? A lot of times we hear people today, all you hear about the stars get all the publicity. But I know that that's not reality because it takes a bunch of guys to make a team, to make a unit.
Exactly.
What would you tell a young person out there, female or young or male, that's trying to go out and play basketball and they want to play for a certain amount of years? What would you tell them? Because all the times aren't going to be easy.
Well, I would tell them to make sure you get your education first. You know, get your education first because that's important. Me personally, I didn't think that way. You know, because like I said, my thing was to, you know, go to school, play basketball, and get out of there. You know, I wasn't after that. Yeah, Georgetown. I wasn't planning on coming back anyway. I wanted to go hardship then. But I was told that I wasn't ready, that I was too young. You know what? Right now today, I figured the best time that I could have went was after we won the championship. Or better yet, maybe I should have stayed and played that year. Hell, I could have left my sophomore year because we would have won it then. You know, and, you know, who knows? Maybe me and Patrick could have been 1 and 2 in the draft. You know? So, I mean, what should have, huh?
No, I was just going to say, nowhere in the world, Bill Nova's going to shoot 88% with you on the floor. Because you're going to change
without
up
it,
4 or 5.
And I think some of the players from Bill Nova know that. They know that. You know, they know that. And I'm not trying to be conceited or anything like that.
Austin.
But, you know, watching that game, that's what it was, because they was going right at Pat. See, well, me and Pat on the floor, you ain't going to get a chance to go get the Pat.
Big fella, you know? Ed Pickney, Dwayne McClain, Gary McClain, they all look very comfortable driving to the basket.
Yes, they did. See, and that would have never happened. They wouldn't have never got to get a chance to get the Pat. They wouldn't have never got their chance to get the Packers.
Oh, you really aren't being conceited. You was being honest, because I saw the same thing with you on the floor. Do you tell me this before we get off the air? You look at who are, I'll just say, give me two. For me, you talk about just playing guys that play hard all the time, like Westbrook and guys like that. But you being a big fella, who are two of your guys that you kind of tried to follow as far as playing just tough every night, playing hard every night?
Wow. You know what? I don't have any. I really don't. You know, I really don't, because the person I used to follow in their career was Patrick. You know, I sort of like Charles Oakley and Anthony Mason. You know, those two, if I were, you know, the model my game, or to, you know, it would be those two guys. Because you got to bring that toughness, and you got to bring that no nonsense. You know, you got to bring that no nonsense and let them know you're not coming up for here. No layup rules. You know, no layup rules.
Hey, Mike, let me tell you, man, it has been so great to talk to you. Because, Michael, I used to be scared of you, man. If I had ever...
For what, man?
I didn't even know you. If I ever came up to you, I would just give you all my money. Just don't hurt me, man.
And you know something, though? I seen this thing some years ago from GQ that I was voted the most intimidating college basketball player to ever play the game. I'm like, are you serious?
I believe that.
If you look on Sports Illustrated, Ricky, they got him doing the dunk on Sports Illustrated. You like up over the square, and even on that picture, you're not exactly smiling, big fella.
No, because like I said, I was ready to come home. And I remember after that dunk, I pointed down the court to Patrick, and I said, time to go home. I knew it. It's time to go home now. You know?
Who would have ever thought that he'd be crying on the back of the bus?
Yeah, man.
Well, Michael, I tell you, man, I don't know of anybody who was – think about – that was 84 when you guys won it, right? 84.
Right, right.
Yeah,
and your name is still, basketball fans all over the world still know who you are today. Man, you have left.
Yeah, and that's incredible, man. I would never think that. That's incredible. I remember I moved to South Carolina. I think this was like 2008. And I'm walking down the street. I'm coming from the mall, and I'm walking with cousins and everything. And this guy would walk right past us. And then he yelled, "Hey, ain't you the bald-headed assassin? They used to play with George Thompson." And I looked around. I'm like, man. And during that time, I had hair. You know, I let my hair grow, trying to disguise myself, because, you know, after I left Georgetown, I sort of felt bad. You know, I tried to sweep this thing up under the rug. I didn't, you know, want to know parks with Georgetown, or nobody to know who I were or anything. You know, and that's how I felt. But, you know, I sort of like came out of that stuff, man, because, you know, I was on a great team that done something really good, you know, in a sense made history. You know, the first team with a black coach that ever went to the NCAA, with the black coach who won it. It was the, you know, Coach Thompson, you know, made history. So I was glad to be a part of that history, you know.
And you guys were a cultural phenomenon in the rap game all over the world, man. People went to Georgetown.
Ricky, I got one quick last question before we get off the air for you, Mike. My freshman year, University of Texas, San Antonio, my first two college games were in a tournament, the Kettle Classic. I don't know if you remember the Kettle Classic in Houston.
Mm-hmm.
That's when the Dream, Olajuwon had just started playing. And my first two games was against the tournament was Lamar, Arizona, University of Texas, San Antonio, and University of Five Slamma Jam. And my first two games of my career, I was fortunate enough to make the all-tournament team. I made it in a small tournament like the Kettle Classic. I can't let you off the air without telling me what it was like to make the all-tournament team, the all-Final Four team in 1984.
Oh, man, that was something, because I didn't think I really played that well to make the tournament, you know, but – you know, after playing Kentucky and, you know, I was MVP, CBS MVP of that game. And then I turn around, we playing Houston. I mean, you know, that was something to be with Patrick, Olajuwon. You know, that was really something for me. And, you know, I was probably a vote or two away from being MVP of the whole tournament. You know, I mean, I think if I would have made my free throws, I probably would have been MVP of the whole tournament. You know, so that was something.
Could you see the greatness of the Dream back then? Did you see that?
Oh, yeah, man. I mean, he talking about me, you know, on a little special they had 30 for 30. He didn't know, this guy, Michael Graham, I didn't know where he comes from. He's dunking everything. But, man, me having to check that guy is quicker than the cat, man. I mean, I've never seen a big fella that move so quick, you know. And checking him, I'm like, damn, why they put me on him? You know, keep packing out foul trouble. I'm like, oh, man, this guy probably going to embarrass me, you know. So, yeah, that made me play hard. But, man, the respect for his game is out of this world, man. He was a hell of a player. And when he got to that next level, that was all she wrote.
Yes, sir.
I agree. Michael, yep. I want to thank you, man, for taking time out coming on the show. Man, I'm telling you, it's really been a pleasure. I hope that Ricky and I can get you back on. I'm going to ask you to do a favor, and I'm going to ask you on the show. I used to have a pretty good relationship with Reggie Williams.
I'll call him and let him know.
Yeah, reach out to Reg, please, man. I would love to have Reggie come on, and hopefully we can get you back on the show, and we can talk about some more. We'll talk about the NBA and things you're doing to help in the community, if you wouldn't mind.
Okay, not at all. I'll reach out to Reggie and, yeah, be giving you a call soon. And, yeah, get him on your show, man.
Tell our listeners one more time how they can help with your project to get the book published.
Well, you know, if you can donate as little as $2, to help me get this thing going, because it's very important that I get it out there, and I want it out there for the young people that have that single parent that's going to college and, you know, trying to make the best out of life. You can make your donations at $GRAHM209, or you can make it at paypal.me/ Michael Graham 50. That's all one word. Now, to help me out, get that book out. Like I said, I have a hell of an author who has written a co-authored book with Phil Jackson. And he's an award-winning author and former professional basketball coach by the name of Charlie Rosen. You all probably seen him last week when he was on the documentary, The Last Dance. And that's my man. And you know what? I love him to death.
Okay, well, we're going to help get that information out there for you, too, Michael. Man, it has been an honor and a pleasure to visit with you tonight.
I thank you all. I really appreciate it, man. I really do. Indeed, I'm going to be calling you Buggy, man, because, you know, and maybe when I get down there to Houston, you know, or Texas, wherever you might be, you know, I come look you up, man. We hang out or something, man.
Hey, Mike, don't say it if you're not going to do it. I'm in San Antonio.
Oh, no, I'm
going to
do it.
I'm
going to do it, man.
You and I, we new friends for life, my man. I want you to tell you this, Mike. I hope you and your family stay safe, man, during this time that we're going through. But I'm a guy that believes this too shall pass. So stay safe. I wish you and your family well, man. I thank you very much for coming on.
And thank you, man. And you all be safe also.
Okay, Mike. Hey, I'll be in touch with you too, man, regarding the book.
All right. That'd be great.
Ricky. Wow, man.
What a
chill. All the listeners, so I want to thank you for tuning in tonight for listening with Ricky Hampton Sr. and myself, Derek Gervin. Thank you for tuning in. As Good As It Gets tonight. I think it was a fantastic show. I want to thank Mr. Michael Graham again and tell all of you out there, I hope you and your families are staying safe. If you have someone ill, we wish them a speedy recovery. And we'll tell you we love you all and thank you for tuning in tonight.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, Ricky. Good night.